majority in the parliament. And they always say that your typical day is when you come from this. Look after the time take a leave to welcome you. And those that could not take leave, just a continuation of the work that they've been doing. Because we support them in constituency. And people are not so they feel that there are those that might have taken leave the Galapo. And there are those that could not take leave. But you are all welcome. In this session of Parliament, I suspect that the committee secretary has distributed the program that was submitted to the House Chair of Committee to how our year will look like. And I must say that we've been asked to submit a further program until sometime next year. So I'll appreciate if members could raise issues that they want us to look at. So that's really to say that we take all those views into consideration. That will include the charges that members may want to think that the committee should do in the coming year. Having said that, we've asked the Deputy Minister to come and discuss with us issues surrounding the NIPAD program. This becomes very critical for us, particularly that we've been champions of this program. And throughout the process, it looks like this process is falling out of the falling out of our concentration. And we are aware that we are hosting the Secretariat of NIPAD here, and surely we are spending a substantial amount of money hosting that Secretariat. So we cannot afford the luxury of allowing it to slip out of our oversight responsibility. We then ask that in doing that, we should not look at NIPAD from the general perspective. We should look at NIPAD both from our country and our region, so as to make sure that we are informed as to what programs are implementing in the region and what programs are influenced by this particular program of NIPAD. There's a debate out there as to whether NIPAD is succeeding or not succeeding. Sometime a year ago, the Director General of our department met in PE to map up the program of the county at some point. Maybe at some point you might have to come back and look at county-specific program of NIPAD and say what is it that we are doing at the county over and above the region. So the Deputy Minister is here. She will take us through the presentation and introduce the people she's with. And of course, we'll then do as normal, we'll then ask questions after that. I just want to welcome Mr. Tony Leon, the new member of the committee, and welcome you, sir. You will soon get used to the committee and their members. We normally take time to ask questions. We normally write a thesis and ask a question after. After some time, we get used to that arrangement. And I suppose that someone will explain to us that's what we do. We allow people to do that because we thought that in any question that they want to ask, they want to see the background. So you get the presentation and the presentation and the question. But that's how the committee has been allowed to do so that members feel comfortable to ask their questions. Deputy Minister, we are in your hands.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning, colleagues, honourable members. May I introduce the people who are attending with me from the Department of Foreign Affairs? Anna Marie Giorgiosi is our parliamentary liaison currently. She's been stationed here David Moody is Deputy Director in the Africa Multilateral Branch of the DFA, particularly in the sub-directorate on their head. So they've come to help me answer any of these difficult questions that you may put to me and that I can't answer. I thought I would first of all thank you very much for the invitation. It's a long time since I addressed this portfolio committee. And I'm not sure whether you didn't want me or whether it was pressure of time, but I'm very pleased to be back here, particularly to discuss the important area of NEDHAD. I also think it's important that the committee is visiting us in Pretoria next week, and we look forward very much to having you all there, and hope that we have initial interaction between ourselves and the department. Now, first of all, let me say that I think we need to say at the outset that South Africa continues to be actively engaged in the NEDHAD process, both at the national, regional, the continental, and international level, in line with our foreign policy vision of consolidating the African agenda. So my presentation here today will focus on a few issues. The first one will be the key challenges and priorities of the implementation of NEDHAD during this current year, 2007-2008. We also want to map out the progress we've made internally in South Africa to internalize NEDHAD as an approach to socio-economic and sustainable development within our own country. Now, thirdly, the presentation will focus on the progress made in SADC and indeed in the translation of the Regional Indicative Strategic Development Program, the RISDP, within SADC as a regional expression of the NEDHAD program. The fourth area would be the continental initiative aimed at meeting NEDHAD priorities. And lastly, we will briefly refer to some of the key continental developments around African peer review mechanisms. Now, I wanted to first ask the committee if everybody's familiar with the RISDP.
We had a presentation by the department dealing with the SADC and went through that.
So that is quite fundamental to the approach that we take in the region particularly. But let me start then with the key challenges and priorities that NEDHAD faces in the coming year. In order to provide capacity and political support for the implementation of NEDHAD programs, we need as a country, we believe, to address, amongst others, the following key challenges. The first is the interacting with key continental and international partners and stakeholders to generate access to and support for financial, technical, and institutional issues for the implementation of NEDHAD, and to utilize every available forum to generate this access. We also need to take in stock the myriad of international pledges of support for the implementation of NEDHAD, as well as the various sectoral NEDHAD plans and strategies and programs and projects, to see what actions should be prioritized by South Africa and to ensure a focused and specific rollout. We also need to ensure that each AU member state and the regional economic communities align national, regional, and regional development programs with NEDHAD. I'd like to start now with the progress that has been made within South Africa through initiatives undertaken by various government departments to internalize NEDHAD as an approach to socio-economic and sustainable development. And I'd like to briefly reflect on this and give members an indication of how far we've come in this process. I'm certain we all agree that a clear framework for the implementation of the first critical step towards ensuring the implementation of NEDHAD is as effective as it could be. Towards this end, we have undertaken the development of the NEDHAD Implementation Strategy for South Africa, which we call NISA. The process of finalizing this NISA document is an advanced stage, and I can report that the process of preparing the strategy was broad-based and included civil society, business and labor, and other key stakeholders, as well as representatives of government at various levels. The framework document of this NISA, emanating from from these consultations is now being converted into the national implementation strategy and will be considered through our international relations peace and security cabinet cluster and then to cabinet. So that's the first sort of step in the way in which we're addressing some of the issues in implementing NEPAD in South Africa. On a more textual level, I'd like to start with, for example, the Department of Science and Technology and what they've done. I don't know where the slide is, I think it's in the last year. The Department of Science and Technology, and they report the following progress. First of all, implementation of the NEPAD Science and Technology Plan of Action was adopted in 2005. So that is already ongoing and in place. Secondly, the African Laser Center, which facilitates continental and joint programs on laser technology, has been established. Thirdly, the implementation of the NEPAD African Biosciences Initiative by four regional networks of centers of excellence throughout the continent has been activated. These activities focus on research and development in the areas of human health, of animal health, industrial and mining, bioprocessing, and environmental remediation. And then finally, under science and technology, there's the expansion of the African Mathematical Institute called AIMS, and it's been expanded into a network of regional centers and spread across the continent. On the communications front, communications infrastructure remains a critical aspect of not only our own, but the development of the continent as a whole. Now, the Department of Communication has reported that it has already briefed South African telecom operators and potential investors on the NEPAD ICT broadband infrastructure network, one of the key projects of the NEPAD Secretariat. And it is anticipated that construction of the first cable, the one known as EZ, East African Submarine Cable System, will be completed by December next year. An agreement is being finalized between the E-Africa Commission and the Pan-African Infrastructure Development Fund for equity investment and funding for this project. It is a private-public partnership program and will greatly enhance our ability on the continent with regard to broadband ICT infrastructure. You are aware, of course, that Parliament is currently considering for ratification the protocol on the policy and regulatory framework for the NEPAD ICT broadband infrastructure network for Eastern and Southern Africa, and this is in line with our national ICT policy and including the Electronic Communications Act. With regard to NEPAD e-schools project, in April 2007, the Department of Communication and Education, plus the Presidential National Commission on the Informational Society, successfully launched the pilot phase of the South African NEPAD eSchools program. As regards the health initiative, Health Department has reported that a NEPAD coordination unit was established in the department, within the department, facilitating studies at the AU as well as harmonization and coordination of the program in line with AU, NEPAD, and other international health strategies and the Millennium Development Goals. The key activity for this financial year shall be the strengthening of the NEPAD Accelerated Malaria Control Program for Africa, also known as the NAMCA. On the issues of good governance, in addition to the APRM, which I will discuss a little bit later, the National Treasury has reported on its work on what is known as the Collaborative Africa Budget Reform Initiative, or CABRI for short. You may be aware the National Treasury is a member of this CABRI initiative, which is a pan-African network of senior government officials in ministries of finance and planning. CABRI's primary objective is to promote the importance of efficient and effective management of public finances to foster economic growth and to enhance service delivery for the improvement of living standards of the people living in Africa. CABRI is owned currently by 26 African member states, and the South African National Treasury houses the CABRI Secretariat. Now, while CABRI is not strictly a NEPAD project, its objectives objectives of MEPAD, which seeks to build, which seeks to establish African ownership of policy design, to build up resourcefulness of people, and to encourage partnership between people across Africa and accelerate continental integration. Then, to move to education, in addition to the eSchools program, which I've mentioned, the Education Department is in the process of developing a scholarship to provide bursaries for deserving students from the African continent who do not have access to higher education institutions. And finally, the Department of Agriculture is aligning its activities to the MEPAD Comprehensive African Agricultural Development Program, something called CARDIP. The Minister of Agriculture has approved, for example, the posting of an agricultural attaché to our mission in Addis Ababa to attend sector issues within the African Union. So those are some of the things on a very tangible level that we in South Africa have done and initiated and are continuing to work on. In terms of the regional implementation of MEPAD, I'd like to turn to the progress we have made with regard to implementation of MEPAD within our own region. Now, you will recall that the RISDP has been the SADC region's response to the implementation of MEPAD's program and has reiterated the synergy between the two, the MEPAD and the RISDP. To this end, activities in terms of the MEPAD sectoral program have been built into each of the sectors of the SADC work program under the RISDP. SADC and MEPAD secretaries have both appointed focal points to expedite cooperation and information sharing between the two institutions. Now, some progress has been made with regard to the implementation of MEPAD at this level, at this regional level, and these are detailed in the briefing that has been circulated to you. And I should have mentioned this, this is a slightly more detailed document than the one that I have been reading. A couple of details about this, and the list of the projects is contained in that document. Now, of course, we have challenges. That would be the list, which was also in the document, but those are some of the detailed, more detailed projects that are being implemented at the regional level. To go now to some of the challenges in implementing MEPAD in our own region, I think it's important to mention that while a number of good initiatives have been undertaken, these have been faced with a common challenge relating to the tax of implementation, to capacity and to resources. Another challenge is, of course, ensuring that a specific MEPAD project must have the potential, we believe, to be expanded into a regional or a continental project. In other words, a national project should have that ability. It should not simply be something that is owned by one country, but should have should be in its design from the outset the potential to be extended to regional and continental levels. Now, one of the key issues that we also have to deal with at a regional level is the process of communicating this to our people and the people of the region so that the African ownership of MEPAD is firmly established. This, we believe, should be done through demonstrating the practical benefits of MEPAD and the RISDP among South Africans. This communication and information sharing, we believe, is vital to the success of the whole MEPAD project. Now I'd like to move on, if I may, to the continental implementation of MEPAD and what is taking place at a continental level. Significant progress has been made regarding the political and strategic direction of MEPAD. And during the 17th meeting of the Heads of State and Government Implementation Committee, which took place in Accra, Ghana on the 1st of July, on the margins of the AU summit, this matter received a great deal of attention. The discussion focused on the integration of the MEPAD Secretariat into the AU Commission, and I think honourable members will be fully aware of this debate, and with the concurrent establishment of a MEPAD Planning and Coordination Agency. In proposing a way forward on the integration issues, President Mbeki acknowledged that the brainstorming summit that had been proposed by President Wale of Senegal in 2006 had not been held. And the President highlighted the need for the summit to be held in order to discuss, among other things, the recommendations on the integration of data into the aid structures and processes. I think members will remember that NEPAD preceded the formation of the African Union in time terms. And so there was created a kind of a disjuncture between the NEPAD program, which was seen by some as outside of African Union, and the African Union process. The intention, of course, is that NEPAD should be a program of the African Union and run through its structures and processes. So the heads of state and government then agreed to the further discussions on integration, which will take place at the brainstorming summit. And we hope that that summit will be held before the end of this year. So that those discussions didn't take place at Accra, pending the outcome of that summit to be held in the course of this year. Progress has also been made with regard to the implementation of NEPAD in the following initiatives. First of all, I'd like to refer to the Pan-African Infrastructure Development Fund. This is an exciting and unprecedented development. As President Beki announced during his recent speech in this Parliament to the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. And I'd like to quote to you what he said, because it sums up quite neatly, I believe, what the Pan-Africa Infrastructure Development Fund is all about. He said that the Pan-Africa Infrastructure Development Fund has been established to finance large-scale African infrastructure development projects. Of critical and historic importance, he said, is the fact that the entirety of the capital of the fund, currently amounting to $625 million, originates exclusively from within our continent. We are confident, he said, that within the next 12 months, the capital base of this infrastructure fund will reach $1 billion. Practically, we as Africans are making a firm statement that we are ready to rely on our own resources to finance our own development, focusing in the first instance on the critically important infrastructure project already elaborated by NEPAD. So I think that has really been quite an important development at the continental level in terms of the financing of NEPAD's project. I'd like to move now to the NEPAD Environment Initiative. This is a fund from the Global Environment Facility, the GEF. This council of the GEF approved an innovative $150 million program to support 28 countries, including South Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, in our initiatives to fight land degradation specifically. This program is directly related to the implementation of the land degradation thematic area of the Environment Initiative of NEPAD that neatly fits in, and there are 28 countries that will be benefiting from that fund. In addition to that Global Environment Facility, there is an African Environment Facility to deal with other matters relating to environment. And this, we believe, will be a key tool in supporting the implementation of the Environment Initiative of NEPAD. And sometimes we find that there is a lack of resources available to African countries through current multilateral environment funding facilities, and therefore this fund has been established. Next, I'd like to go on to the NEPAD Tourism Action Plan. This is a strategic objective of the NEPAD Tourism Action Plan and is indeed a priority intervention in our own region. Of course, there's also the NEPAD ICT program. The Orient Française de Développement, the AFD, has signed and granted agreement with the NEPAD E-Africa Commission through the Development Bank of Southern Africa to support NEPAD information and communication technologies and broadband infrastructure program. The focus of this fund tends to be more on Francophone countries, but it's a very a powerful source of funding for our ICT programs on the continent. Then there's the NEPAD Food and Security Summit, which is focusing on the availability and accessibility and affordability of food. This summit was held in Abuja, Nigeria, in December last year, and the objective was to review progress in the implementation of the 1996 World Food Summit outcomes, as well as the 2003 Maputo Declaration, which stated that a 10% budget, government budgetary allocation for agriculture by all African countries was necessary in order to achieve food security. The next one I'd like to turn to is the Programme on Governance and Public Administration. And operating under the guidance of the Pan-African Ministers of the Public Service, the programme embodies a commitment by the continent to revitalise governance and public administration through strengthening the capacity of state institutions. Again, another NEPAD programme is the Broadband Infrastructure Project, to which I have referred, namely the East African Submarine Cable, which has been identified as a flagship project by the heads of state and government. It is, as I've said, a private public partnership initiative and involves 31 telecom companies and development finance institutions. I'd like to make reference here also to the Chinese government support for NEPAD. A memorandum of understanding was signed between NEPAD Secretariat and the Secretariat of the China-Africa Forum at the end of the visit of the NEPAD Secretariat CEO, Professor Mukavele, to China at the invitation of the Chinese government. The memorandum of understanding aims to strengthen cooperation and exchange of information between the secretariats and explore means of supporting NEPAD, especially in human resource development. To date, the Chinese government has handed over a check of $500,000 to the NEPAD secretariat, and this money has been used for nursing and midwifery training, mainly in East Africa. Now, in addition to what I've mentioned about South Africa's role, the region's progress, and indeed continental progress, I'd like to refer to sort of overall progress made on the African continent due to countries adhering to the NEPAD vision and the principles embodied in the NEPAD program. And we believe there have been encouraging and significant progress registered during the past few years with regard to this vision and the principles outlined in the NEPAD program. And they include areas of conflict resolution and peace building in many countries. As you will all know, the African Union is indeed leading the resolution of conflicts and managing peace building in many countries on the continent. Budgets, mandates, and the leadership of key organs of the African Union are being reinforced, and NEPAD principles and commitments are giving strength and direction, we believe, to these changes. The regional economic communities are working to align their programs in line with NEPAD's priorities as well. In terms of the AU Peace and Security Commission, the AU Peace and Security Commission has been established, one of the organs of the AU. The structure provides a framework for conflict prevention, management, and resolution for peacekeeping and peace building. South Africa plays a very key role in that peace and security commission. In fact, South Africa chairs the post-conflict reconstruction committee for Sudan. Other priority areas: through NEPAD, African leaders have fundamentally changed the development paradigm to include agriculture, infrastructure, ICT, science and technology, environment, and regional economic integration, which were not among the top priorities of the development agenda of the international partners, but now have become the core issues in our discussions with our international partners and in our own work on the continent. And the health, the emergence of a global fund to fight AIDS, TB and malaria provides resources for the overarching strategy to address AIDS and impact on development, and many countries on the continent are benefiting from this fund. In terms of infrastructure development, in the past 6 years, the African Development Bank and the World Bank have increased priority to projects under the NEPAD Short-Term Action Plan for infrastructure development, and a number of regional infrastructure projects have been moved to implementation stage, some of which I have mentioned. Another achievement, we believe, is the level of overseas development aid. The increased engagement with the G8 countries, with the OECD countries, and EU countries has resulted in an increased level of development assistance flows to Africa over the past 5 years. However, I think it should be said that these flows must be understood against the debt service burdens In terms of African economic growth, on the economic front, trends that existed before are being reversed. The economic outlook for the African continent is the best it has seen for many years. There is an increase in countries following sound macroeconomic planning policies and management of their economies. The United Nations Economic Commission for Africa in its 2007 report states that with regard to growing prospects for 2007 and the medium-term outlook, Africa is expected to grow at a rate of 5.8% in 2007 and slightly higher than the rate that was recorded in the previous year. But of course, there are still many challenges facing MEPAD implementation, and while significant progress has been made in MEPAD, a number of challenges still exist, and these need to be tackled head-on in order for us to move forward. I'll just mention them. We need to continue to look at the strengthening of political leadership, of capacity building, of the integration of the MEPAD priorities into national development programs, of the increase of multi-country infrastructure projects, of widening the African peer review mechanism and participation, of converting the pledges made by developed countries into concrete action, and using ODR generally more effective on the continent. I have said that I would touch on the African peer review mechanism, so I'd like to just briefly inform members of some of the latest developments. The APRM is a flagship program that has received international acclaim, and the first set of reviews has been completed in Ghana, Rwanda, Kenya, Algeria, and South Africa. Thus far, 26 countries have acceded to the APRM. The APRM process is addressing corruption, is addressing poor governance, and inefficient delivery of public goods and services to their citizens. And you'll see there the eight countries that are at the various stages of implementation of the APRM. The APR panel has also agreed that lessons learned from the five reviews done so far necessitate a brainstorming session. This is a session, another brainstorming. And so this will be held in Algiers towards the end of October 2007, when a review of what has taken place up until now will be undertaken in order to learn going forward, as this is a whole new exercise for the continent and indeed for the world in many ways. And so, in conclusion, I'd like to say that the rationale for the continued promotion of MEPAD has not changed, and if anything, there is now an even stronger case for its recognition as key to Africa's development challenges. African priority programs have been developed and are ready for implementation. MEPAD is, as you know, a long-term development program, and critical success factors include some that I have mentioned, including enhanced political leadership, ownership by the people of Africa, strengthening of institutional, human and financial capacity of national, regional and continental development institutions, and increased support by the international community. We believe that African people need to be convinced that MEPAD is relevant to them, that it can address poverty, can ensure sustainable socioeconomic development and growth, and can make a significant impact on the quality of their daily lives. People need to see tangible infrastructure projects, improvement in agricultural production, and improved health and education delivery systems. It is in these areas that the greatest challenges for MEPAD are found. And despite the fact that much progress has been made, the scale and the pace of delivery in these priority sectors remain frustratingly low. So South Africa has taken a leading role in developing MEPAD as Africa's premier development program and in mobilizing African and international support for MEPAD and in supporting the structures and processes of MEPAD. And in looking forward to 2010, we believe that it is crucial that South Africa continues to mobilize with material support, that MEPAD should be made relevant to South Africa as a country and to her people, and that South Africa should actively assist in the process to move MEPAD to a higher plane of action and implementation. impact at national, regional, continental and international level, so as to muster effective and vigorous support for Africa's development program. But I also believe, Chair and honourable members, that there is an important role for this committee and for indeed members of Parliament generally in promoting NPAD as an approach to development and in playing an active role in its advocacy. So, colleagues and honourable members, thank you very much indeed for your attention, and I would be happy to attempt to answer any questions that you have arising out of that presentation. Thank you very much.
We'll then go through the normal process of asking questions. The deputy minister can have to in terms of the dissemination of information. Now there is a perception that this whole effort of impact is top down because it's only known by those who are in the
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Deputy Minister. I'd like to ask you two unrelated questions. The first is that there's nothing in this document that deals with the issue of deepening or strengthening democracy and democratic institutions. There's talk about government and political leadership, but there's nothing on that score which I really understood on the core principle, foundational principle of NPAD. And I raise that in the context of Zimbabwe, Deputy Minister, which is imploding. There was a report this morning that 13 million Zimbabwe dollars are now worth one US dollar in reverse. That's an extraordinary thing. And the inflation rate in Zimbabwe is now the highest in the world in recorded economic history. And what effect is that having on not just the implementation of NPAD programs in the NPAD region, but on the international receptiveness of ODA, donor countries, international communities, G8, on the viability and credibility of NPAD in your assessment, and I wonder if you've addressed it. My second question, not related to this, is recently at the World Economic Forum in Cape Town, it was reported that President Watt of Senegal had basically washed his hands of NPAD, and he was, as we know, one of the co-architects of the NPAD idea, and was particularly vehement on the issue of infrastructure, which you have in some depth and detail highlighted today. Now, what has led to this disaffection on his part? What are the consequences, meaningful or otherwise? Could you elaborate on that?
Honourable
Chair,
thank you.
Deputy Minister, my question actually relates to the document we've been asking for this some time. But I think what is in my understanding, and if we are to be part and parcel of promoting NPAD, I think we ought to know a bit more what we are doing in our region. The STEP program, the electricity across the different borders, the electricity, the integration of the electricity grid, and those kind of concrete things that we that is happening in our region. Now, so it has, when we do go out, you know, to our public forums and our own constituencies, we're able to actually come say something constructive and concrete to them. Now this is, I mean, this is very good. We've been asking for such document, but we need some in-depth understanding of what the projects are, where they are based, and the different countries involved, like Botswana and Maputo on the east and so on. So I would appreciate if we had something more concrete.
Deputy Minister, in the questions that you've asked, we are disengaging the ministry, particularly on issues surrounding the Zimbabwe. So I wanted to bring that to their forward. There is a process that I'm engaging in the ministry to discuss about the debt at some point. To deal with that in depth at some point. So I'm just saying that in that process, we will just try to see how we are going to handle that particular meeting. I'm raising this in the light of the question that the Honourable Union has raised, that there is this particular process, and maybe some detailed responses could be given in that respect. But also linked to that will be the Omega Plan was at some point brought together to form what we now call MUPA. To what extent has one party still committed to the Omega Plan and not really committed to the fact that the two plans at some point merged and still believe that the other plan was actually better than the outcome of what you see today in MUPA? And to what extent do the politics internationally play a role in that? Because it has been said that in the process of developing what we now call HIPAA, in that process, Omega Plan also emerged as an alternative. However, it was agreed that the two documents must be matched. And I assume that it's public knowledge that in that process, there were other players, international players, who were involved in the development of other documents. And therefore, the issue of the disaffection, to what extent is it related to the commitment to the Omega Plan that it could be construed at some point that it was the dominance of one document over the other, or of one change over the other within the continent? And to what extent has that played itself in the current situation of impact? The other issue relates to ourselves as South Africa. Conceptually and otherwise, we have put forward and we've worked for what it is today. But in the presentation, you say that African masses must be convinced that NIPAC is relevant to them and it can address poverty and can ensure sustainable socio-economic development and growth, and it can make significant impact on the quality of their daily lives. So if one has to take that statement and superimpose the fact that at no particular point do we see South Africa bringing up programs that could clearly be identified as a deliverer of the policy in this particular instance. To what extent then are we able to convince ordinary people that in fact LIPAC is a policy that can deliver a sustainable economic development of the continent if we do not raise the profile of what's been done on that? And I'm raising that because there's a concept that says if we do not see projects, then LIPAC does not exist. And another concept says NIPAC is not about projects, it's about an economic policy. So how do you reconcile the two? And that could in a degree explain the disaffection on another level, because it has been said that President Wale has reported in a number of times, say, show me the project that NIPAC does. And therefore, it does not deliver. And the response then was that NIPAC is not about projects. But what it's all about is to an ordinary person, what it's all about is if they cannot see the possibility of a sustainable development. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Yes. I think a couple of the questions relate, three of the questions relate to the question of how we disseminate information. What is being done? How do we get to the people? How do we persuade people about what NEPAD is? And we have confronted this matter, and we have indicated that it remains a great challenge. The program that I described in the beginning, the national, the NISA, the national implementation strategy for South Africa, for NEPAD, is a process that has been consulted extremely deeply and widely among civil society, amongst labor and business and key stakeholders of government, as I said. There is also a local ECOSOC, which is dealing, and it's run actually by Sangoka, which is dealing with popularizing NEPAD through a civil society wing. Then a lot more needs to be done. And one of the problems, I think, relates to the question that was asked by Mr. Satoli, which is, what is NEPAD? Now, NEPAD is very difficult to describe in soundbite because it is essentially an approach to socioeconomic development. It is an approach that says Africa should take charge of itself, Africa should drive its own development. It should not be a pool of money from which everybody can come and take and make an infrastructure project there or a health program in another place. It is not easy to say, well, that is NEPAD over there, and you can see it with your eyes. It is an approach to socio-economic development. And I think that we need to further engage with yourself, but with others in civil society, on how we can spread this information and this word amongst our own people in order that they can understand and come to terms with the way in which we are approaching the development of our country in a completely different way to in the past. Now, I would like to now go to the question raised by Mr. Leon about opening democracy. I specifically didn't talk too much about the APRN process, because, as you know, that is being handled by our Ministry of Public Service and Administration. Our own process, as you know, was dealt with, the culmination of our own APRN process was dealt with at the Accra Summit by the heads of state, and the peer review took place there. As a result of that, a program of action is being developed to deal with the matters that were relating to our report. And therefore, the Minister of Public Service and Administration is the one who is speaking mainly on these matters. But the APRM is the governance aspect. It's about good governance. It's about the way in which African countries judge each other, essentially, in order to promote good governance on the continent. I would like to say, however, that APRM is not seen as a punitive action, but rather as a corrective measure. That is a way in which it is constructed. In other words, you voluntarily submit yourself to the review of your peers in order to try and better and correct the way in which your government is not succeeding or succeeding in different areas. And so far, as I've said, five countries have gone through this process, and there's been a lot of discussion about it and whether it's working and whether it's not, hence the brainstorming is due to take place in October in Algiers, so that we can look at what is right and what is wrong with the whole process. Zimbabwe has not signed up, needless to say, for the APRN process, but it is part of our task to encourage all members to do so, so that we can effect, in fact, those corrective measures that are necessary. I think, in terms of Zimbabwe, obviously, the impact of the dire situation, economic and otherwise, in Zimbabwe will be felt very keenly by ourselves and by the region in general. It is one of the reasons why our president has agreed, as you know, mandated by his SADC peers, to engage in a process to try and pull the situation back from the brink. We would have no benefit, nor would we see any benefit, in the situation in Zimbabwe worsening. And within our power as neighbors and as our president's position in the region, we would like to see the situation improving, and that is why our president is doing everything in his power to try and come to some resolution amongst the various players in Zimbabwe. Let me reiterate, however, that we regard the situation as extremely serious in that country, and we wish and work towards improving the situation in as best way as we can. Now, a couple of people also mentioned President Wade of Senegal. I think I did mention in my... there is no doubt that President Wade has expressed reservations and raised a lot of criticism about NEPAD as a program. You will recall, I think you raised it, he launched an Amiga plan. There was another plan in which our president was involved called MAP, if I'm not sure. It was Millennium Action Plan at the time. And the two were merged famously to form this NEPAD initiative. It has not been without its difficulty in selling the concept. But we believe that a lot of the measures that I've mentioned, including the infrastructure funds and others, are moving towards entrenching this as the government, as the African Union's program moving forward. President Wade has agreed, as far as I understand, to attend that meeting where the brainstorming will take place about the direction and the uses and the problem with NEPAD. So we are hoping that that will be a step forward. As I mentioned in the presentation, at ACCA, the subject was put aside until that brainstorming takes place. You know, as you know, the way in which we've approached our foreign policy in general and in specific has been to always engage with people until you reach the solution to the way in which the problems emerge. And we believe that we can continue to engage with other African leaders who might have reservations in this regard to persuade them of the benefits of the program. Honourable Hadjade, you asked about some more information, and certainly we can provide you with that. In the more detailed document, there is a little bit more information on some of the projects, including the Western Corridor Power Interconnector and others. But I can certainly ask our people to get a full and comprehensive list of all the SADC projects, of which there are many. As I mentioned in the presentation, one of the issues we have is that they have to be identified as NEPAD or ISDP projects. You can't just say because we're building a dam, that's a South African project. Because it links with various other regional, other countries in the region, it is necessary then that it becomes a NEPAD project and seen as such. We actually do have quite a lot of information and 2007 updated information on the SADC program. One of the areas where we have less information is on the big projects on the rest of the African continent. There is, for example, a great road being planned across the northern part of the continent. There's also the famous Inga Dam, which will provide in hydroelectricity for the continent. These are all, we believe, really major, big infrastructure programs. But unfortunately, we don't have a consolidated list of the projects elsewhere on the continent. We can get you one that is a little bit outdated, which are all costed and up at implementation stage. But it's a little bit outdated. What we do have, though, is much more current information on the more regional issues. So we can certainly provide you with that. And I hope that this document, I'm sorry if it's been delayed, I didn't realize that, but I hope that this document can provide some basis also. Of course, NEPAD is very much an ongoing and moving program, and therefore it's important that we keep updated on a regular basis. So we will give you those concrete matters, and we will continue. We've in fact asked the NEPAD Secretariat for a comprehensive program of all the continental projects, but we haven't received an up-to-date one yet. I think I've addressed most of your questions because they're related to some of the others that have come forward. I hope I've answered all your questions.
This is an addition to add, if I may, that we've also seen that we're looking at the continental. There's also a private sector formation called the Nepal Business Group.
Yeah.
The seven countries, the South African and Grand Canyon, and the extended. And with the round table group as well, the Commonwealth Business Council and World Economic Forum and all these countries. That people understand that it's and secondly, also that African Union Diaspora have also established a Nepal Council where they are leading African scientists working in the UK and Europe. So I think those kind of things, just to add to, to the paper. But it was just another thing that the reason I asked the first question is that we are seeing in the African Union that before, especially the African Union government, that will happen at some stage in the future. And we all know that the REPs have to be strengthened. So that is why it's very important for us to know how do we strengthen the regional economic communities and even as part of the oversight, to fulfill our oversight role in looking at some of these projects. Because I know Minister Alex Irwin once asked, why don't you go to the Minister Maputo corridor to see what's been happening? So we really do need up-to-date
Minister, there are two areas. I don't want to ask if it's part of policy, but to what extent do we use NIPAC to advance issues of regional integration? And raising this also, taking cognizance of the fact that budget has allowed the EU to redefine it in terms of economic partnership agreements. And what you regard as strategic is not what is strategic. So if you argue regional integration and you argue the regional program and you argue all these things, but then when you negotiate economic agreements, you subdivide the region, I find it quite inconsistent that we've created that. With the inclusion of South Africa now, only seven countries constitute the SADC IPA process. How do you see all these things building up into ultimately what we call the Grand Debate, when you further subdivide the continent? You have other countries of SADC negotiating as different entities. As part of the economic partnership agreement. But we all agree that we want to do regional integration. How do we do that? The other issue that I want to raise is the domestication of Nepal. It has always been argued that you need to domesticate Nepal. You need to establish, you have lead departments in countries that need this project. The last time we knew that we've been struggling with that, and my understanding that when the DGs met in PE was to try and deal with that particular program. But no one has seen the outcome of that particular meeting as to what exactly, in South Africa, as South Africans, what is it that we are doing in that particular situation. So those are the two issues that I thought that I should raise in that respect.
I was just going to the issue of communication, which is the chair. Except on the issue of communication, which the chair raised in the beginning, and he raised couple of issues now which relate to that in the sense of the domestic case. I'd just like to follow up because I heard what you said, but it's the one criticism that I hear everywhere about MeTime. Everybody agrees it's a good thing, but it seems to fade it from people's minds. And they say, well, what is going on? We never seem to know, really. There seems to be a lack of communication. And I just wondered whether there have been, as far as the CSA is concerned about that, and whether any particular measures have been implemented, whether any budgets, in the end, to have good communication and cost money. So I just wondered if any efforts in terms of financial sources or any staff in the work have been allocated to the communication problem, which I think, you've talked about, but I'd like to confirm that it's the one problem I've picked up with you. Everybody loves me, but they don't know what's happening in the industry of life.
Thank you very much. Yes, I thought Honourable Member Hajjade raising the business side of things was very important because there is a NetHaz Business Foundation which consists of business, DTI and the DSA, and there will be a NetHaz project conference that group is going to be hosting in order just exactly to do that, to popularize the whole program amongst particularly South African investors and in the business community generally. So there's that side to it too. I think the question, and once again, we will certainly provide you with as much information as possible on what is happening in the region so that this committee can take an active interest in providing oversight as to how some of these things are happening. I think the Honourable Chair, raised the question about how is NetHaz advancing regional integration. Now, I've tried to underscore that we regard NetHaz as linked very much and closely to the RISBP, as you know, which is the Regional Indicative Strategic Programme. And that program is all about integration. It's all about how we integrate and how we integrate our region economically. The FIPO, the other program, is about the political and security integration. But the RISDP, which is why I mentioned it in the same context, is really about regional economic integration. I'm very glad that you raised the question of regional integration. You raised it in a way that I might not have when you said SADC has allowed the European Union to redefine it. We wouldn't put it that way, I don't think. But indeed, there are major challenges with the way in which different countries in SADC see themselves going forward in terms of economic development terms and trade terms. You will be aware that there is a lot of overlap in membership of the various countries of SADC with other regional communities. And this has been highlighted, as you pointed out, by the Grand Debate. Because when the heads of state went to Accra, they decided finally, after an interesting debate, that it was not the time for African Union government. That what we needed to focus on was regional communities and strengthening them in order to build towards a united Africa, which is our ultimate goal. So this has become very key, and in fact our department and government generally, in fact this is one of the key issues raised at our cabinet report, as you'll be aware, have begun a very thorough and in-depth process on analysing precisely the questions you asked. What does the SACU mean, the South African Customs Union? What happens if some SADC countries join COMESA? Some SADC countries are even part of the ECA, East African Community. A whole lot of these things need to be resolved and worked out. While we have very good political and security coordination in our region, our economic coordination needs to be fine-tuned and fast-tracked. We have a SADC FTA process, as you know, but this needs to be implemented. So there are a number of steps that we are planning.
which will be consulted and which will be debated, obviously, but to advance regional integration. The domesticating of NEPAD, and you talked about the lead department, the PE workshop was the beginning of the first one in the consultation process to which I referred, the NEPAD implementation strategy. That, we believe, had quite a deep effect. It included a number of role players, both those workshops, the one that took place in PE and followed up by FAMSA, to the point where we now have a draft document which is being prepared for cabinet. So that will be coming through to you after that cabinet process is complete. But it does go to the point that Honourable Camara raised, and it is something that we grapple with. How does government popularize, especially a government department like Foreign Affairs, which has got an international mandate, how do you popularize on the ground? And what we have relied on has been the ECOSOC angle of the thing, run by civil society, and quite frankly, it hasn't worked very well. So that is why, one of the reasons we decided to go for this NISA process, and to try and include people in the popularizing of NEPAD from the ground. I think what happened was there was a great deal of enthusiasm for NEPAD in the beginning. Then all sorts of the practical problems began to emerge. Hence, there was a sort of a dip in the kind of awareness raising and so on of what was happening in NEPAD. And then, and now we've tried to employ different tactics and different strategies to ensure that this thing is deeply entrenched as part of, you know, South African life. And part of it is the naming and the labeling, should I say, of programs and projects, and particularly those big infrastructure programs to which you refer, the electricity ones and so on. That is how we get socioeconomic development through these NEPAD projects, but also through the activity of taking control of our own development. That is what it's about, the activity of taking control. In other words, we're asking for investment to build our country. That's what we're asking for, and hence the partnership with the North. And I think we should also mention at this point that there is something called the Africa Partnership Forum, which is a North-South engagement, which deals with all these things. It's one of the side issues of the Glen Eagle Summit, for example. That there's a practical grouping called the Africa Partnership Forum, which will be meeting in Algiers. Is it Algiers? Later this year. Really, basically, to report back from the northern countries, will be asked to report back to the African countries on their commitments made at Glen Eagle, amongst other things. So there's that forum as well, which kind of links up with the North. There's the business forum I talked about. There's the NISA process. I mean, we are trying to construct a framework around which we can actually fully and effectively promote what we believe is an essential program for the African Renaissance, essentially. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I think we still have to come back on these issues. Sometime in October, we'll be having a briefing on what we call the GIF commitments to Africa, so we can get updates as to the issue I'm referring to. So that meeting is coming sometime in October to get that briefing. But to close the meeting, Minister, we have put it correctly that you wouldn't put it as allowing the EU to subsidize further. The good thing is that when you're an MP, you're not bound by diplomatic language. So I could put it that way. I could put it that way because I do not agree with the manner in which SADC has been divided. In fact, to me, it does not advance regional integration. Although they argue that IPA processes to advance regional integration, I'm not sure how do you do that. But I think on the same issues of communication to round off, is that there are issues of regional integration, and I think we need some education of South Africans. We are fed to the xenophobia. If you ask for regional integration and you have problems with xenophobia, it raises questions. Because regional integration unavoidably, it suggests that you'll have at some point a free movement of people from one country to another. And we are worried about Zimbabweans now. We raise all our emotions about it. That goes to the heart of regional integration. When you integrate the region, it means Zimbabweans will move freely into this country, in and out, as much as South Africans will do. So we need to come back and look at these things at the real practical terms, what do they mean. When South Africa went to the neighboring countries in the 60s to recruit for labor, we did not worry. And I could put my head on the block that 80% of those people, they became South African over time. Those families are now in the third generation. They are South Africans. To what extent do we want to argue about purity of a South African vis-a-vis the fact that we are sitting with a third generation of people from the neighboring countries? This is quite an issue. But of course, I'm an MP. I could raise all other things. I'm not bound by diplomatic things. But the last issue that I want to raise, and probably it does not need an answer, but it needs a thought, is that as we continue to argue about the continent in our region, I find an interesting phenomenon in our country, that none of our institutions or places of memory, do we name them after African leaders that have set up the process of our own liberation and of the liberation of the continent. I'm struggling. Every South African, when he thinks about naming an institution, we only think about our own people that fought for our struggle. Is it not the duty of foreign affairs to start saying, let's think outside the box? Heroes were not only confined into what is defined as South Africa, but you have other people that contributed in a particular way to our own freedom as we enjoy it today. Is it not time for us as foreign affairs to start bringing that international element into how we name institutions that must keep memories of what we are as a country? Because what we are is not only isolated to be South African, it's part of the continent. And therefore, we need to recognize the fact that our borders do not only end where the conference of colonizers defined what is called South Africa, but it recognizes other contributions made by other individuals in that process. With that note, thank you, Deputy Minister. We are still going to call. We are still going to call on you. Yes, you can have the last word, but the difference is that in the committee, the chair has the last word. I'm going to allow you to have the last word.
Thank you, Chair. No, what I wanted to say was I really do think that you've raised a very important subject in the regional integration issue. As I said, we are in the middle of a very fast-tracking kind of process in order to try and move towards an integrated status, particularly on economics. And I think it could be the subject of a discussion in the portfolio committee at a later stage in the year. And we will obviously keep in touch with our own processes because they will take some time. You know, the SADC summit is in August. Are we in August yet? Yes, we are. It's this month. And we think that there will be some progress, but it will be a much longer thing and a longer term thing. And I think that it would be a very useful subject for conversation in the committee. That's all I wanted to say.
Honourable Member, two things. I'm told that there's a similar lunch outside, but I just want to draw attention to members that on the 14th, I think it's a Tuesday, right? We have a lunch with Karen Shin, an MEP from the European Union. It's going to be an informal meeting. We are going to discuss issues around Zimbabwe with the EU and Sarahawi. So members are 14th day. They will advise where the lunch will be.
So we thought that we'll have just an informal gathering in that, and then we can discuss with the MEP and understand how the EU Parliament handles that.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Please advise the office that we might come back. So they must not shut the door. Keep the door open. And not to at any time that they want to close.